Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's guest is John Gray. He's famous for his work with, you know, Women Are From Mars, Men Are From Venus.
Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
I said that backwards just to make you mad. I totally did that just to see how you'd respond. So basically, we're from different planets. And the names of the planets are kind of vague. I'm kidding. And he's also been in a couple of my books, particularly in Game Changers, where I interviewed 500, I call them elders or masters, people who've done massive work to change the world. And if you've never read any of John's books, his most recent book is called Beyond Mars and Venus, and it is mind-blowing from a biohacking perspective. So yes, relationships, where there are insights that have helped my marriage that I've learned from John in person, but there's also just a lot of stuff around what your hormones do and all. And so first of all, John, I'm so happy to get to spend time with you and to get to share this time with a few hundred thousand people. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you. And nice to be up here in the mountains hanging out.
When we've hung out other times, you've supported my book launches by giving a talk in San Francisco. And I'm so grateful for all the work you're doing. But after we put down the microphones and all over dinner, you told me all these sort of juicy secrets of Taoism that you say, I just don't know that the audience is ready for that. I this is off the record. I'm like, no, when you have a master with you, you don't want stuff to be off the record. That's the best stuff. So you agreed that you were going to spill the beans
today
about some of the stuff that a lot of people want to know. If your kids are listening, some of the stuff is maybe not safe for work, but it is all out of respect and how humans work and science-based and all that stuff, but it might get a little bit sticky.
Yeah, this is R-rated, X-rated, and
I don't know if we're not going to go to X.
No,
this is
I don't think this R. It's education. You know, I think we all need sex education, and this is things I've been learning and teaching and practicing since 1979. I was a monk for 9 years. Hadn't had sex in 9 years.
Okay, first of all, let's go there. By the way, we're going to talk about the equation, the Taoist equation I tried to disprove and failed to disprove.
Yeah.
About male ejaculation versus orgasm. We'll talk about women and the effect on them as well. But I want to go, what's it like to not have an orgasm for 9 years? Because I went for 30 days a few times to disprove and fail at the Taoism thing. But 9 years, I can't imagine. What did it do to you?
This is from 18 to 27.
So the time when you're supposed to ejaculate every 5 minutes.
Time when you... First of all, I'm very active as a teenager sexually. I like sex a lot. And the Beatles went to be with Maharishi, and they said you can get high without drugs. So I got all inspired. I did that. He was a celibate. And I just, you know, I'm a student. You know, he was my mentor. I wanted to be just like him. And how do you go without ejaculating or masturbating for 9 years? You have to be motivated, and you have to meditate a lot. You take the energy up. So I remember I used to meditate like twice a day, 20 minutes, then went to 30 minutes, then 50 minutes, then an hour twice a day, then 2 hours twice a day. And I'm in more of an ashram type setting at this time, traveling with him quite a bit too. I was his personal assistant. But then we'd go on these retreats, and I went to, like, you know, literally 15, 16 hours a day of meditation. And we're talking sitting straight up, effortless ecstasy of the energy just flowing up and swirling around.
You can go some very, very altered states that way.
Yeah, very altered state. But you have to, in order to do that, in my experience, is you have to contain the semen. The semen gives you the energy. After maybe about 7 years into the celibacy for me, not releasing ever, you could actually smell the semen coming out of my perspiration. It filled my body. The Hindus talk about that as ojas. Your semen then converts. If you hold it into your body and you use it, you can't just not sex. That just goes dead. You've got to use that energy. So if sex for me was a lot like this movement, like this, literally,
you're basically meditating and rocking your pelvis.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Were you like getting
no sexual arousal?
Okay,
a spiritual arousal. It was like amazing. It's unbounded awareness. It's ecstatic. It's like listening to symphony. And at certain points, when I would fast, I'd actually hear the music of the spheres, which was heavenly. It was heavenly. Then after 9 years, my brother was bipolar, and meditation didn't fix it. So I couldn't be out there meditating and being happy without doing something. So that's when I went to study psychology and got into, you know, psychology and relationships and all that. And it's a big fun story, but the bottom line is I started having sex. And the first time I had sex after not ejaculating for 9 years was 3 days.
Did you turn yourself inside out?
I don't know what that means.
Well, I'm just imagining that if I didn't have sex for 9 years, I would have basically had such a powerful orgasm that I would physically turn myself inside out.
It was like, orgasm and orgasm and orgasm.
So 3 days of that.
3 days of that. Yeah. And we slept and we ate and in between.
Were you like physically destroyed after that?
I was in heaven. I said, this is... I mean, I've been in heaven before, but I said, if I could have a choice, I'll take this.
Did you?
Our physical orgasm was another level.
Did you regret your 9 years of celibacy when you finally got to have sex?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay. So it was worth the price.
It was not a sacrifice for me to be celibate. It was a freedom to have this time to go high and then bring it down. See, a lot of people just want to go high and there's nothing wrong with that. But at a certain point, you are one with all. So then you got to, the point is bringing it into the body, and not everybody has to be as extreme as me to do that. So I went to that extreme. Then I started, as soon as I finally ejaculated after 3 days, it was all gone.
Oh, so you had sex for 3 days and then you ejaculated.
And then I ejaculated.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, so I was multi-orgasmic.
That's why you didn't turn yourself inside out. Got it.
Yeah. No, I crashed. It was like
Afterwards, suddenly, okay. This
huge, effortless spaciousness of awareness and fluidity just was gone. And then I realized that's why, you know, you want to conserve the energy or the semen for men. It is the fuel for the brain to have higher consciousness and my awareness. So I started teaching it. That was my first classes. Basically I traveled around for a year having lots of girlfriends. And I read their palms and made love to them.
This was in the 70s?
Yeah.
Man, and I was only eight in the 70s. So
it was a fun time.
I missed on that fun decade. All right.
And see, in the TM movement, I was like this celebrity, but also known as untouchable because I was a celibate. But then all these girls, now I was out. I had easy access to a lot of women.
You went to touchable from untouchable, people wanted to take it.
Anyway, it was really fun. But with every woman, I said, you know, I've been a monk for 9 years. I need you to teach me about your body. So I had these conversations with women about what they liked, what they didn't like. And I'd never known any of this stuff. And a lot of other guys don't know this stuff, particularly back in the 70s. There weren't a lot of books about this. So I figured after a year of this, I would start teaching classes called Making Love Workshop and get people together and share what I would learn during that year, have everybody in the room talk about what their best sexual experiences were. And that was just
not in like a porno way, but in a learning way.
In an educational way.
Yeah.
And eventually that moved into, to sustain the sexual attraction, you need to have love. I mean, love is really what it's about. I mean, the subtitle of the workshop was The Purpose of Sex is to Make Love, you know, sharing and expressing love. And that's really what it's about for me. And to me, we have to understand the energetics of higher consciousness. If you lust after a woman, basically all that energy is just going out of you.
But it's one of the seven deadly sins.
Well, it's not like a bad thing. I mean, teenagers looking all over the place. But at the same time, if you want to raise your consciousness, when you're lusting after someone who's not lusting back at you,
yes,
that's the whole key. You've got to circle the energy. And that's where the love comes into place. Otherwise, you deplete the higher consciousness. The energy goes out.
And is there a difference between desire versus lust?
Yes, for sure. Okay. In my experience, a simple distinction would be when I was a teenager, I would lust after girls. Oh, I really want to have that. I really want that. I really want. And even sometimes in my marriage, I would feel lust when I would, I feel like Jimmy Carter saying, I sinned, I felt lust. I'm not judging it in any way. I'm just saying.
Just a quick commercial break. Not commercial, but whatever PSA it's called. Look, every man alive has felt lust for someone or very strong attraction. Like, man, I'd really like to do, and inserted the blanks. It's part of being a guy. It's completely part of being a guy. And it's how you act on that desire that decides whether you're a high integrity guy or not.
It's how you act on it, and it's whether it's returned, it becomes desire.
Yeah.
See, then that's when someone loves you and you love them, then the energy's not wasted. But, you know, you're kind of pining away after somebody. All your energy's going out. And it's a funny image keeps coming up, but the place where I would experience it the most, because we didn't have a lot of internet porn then or anything like that, but you had the Olympics skaters and those women would be twirling around and I would look at it and go, this energy, just, I wanted that.
You know, I was 14 watching the Olympics. I remember that too. Those little skater outfits. In fact, I used to wonder, why is skating one of the most popular Olympic sports?
Absolutely. We kind of know.
I got it.
But what I realized is that very strong attraction to that is the masculine part of me wanting to connect with the feminine part of me. See, ultimately enlightenment and being in the flow and creativity and self-actualization and all those good things is about balancing the masculine and feminine within ourselves. When you look at all the, you know, the ancient Tibetan statues of the gods, they're always making love and having sex. And yeah, they actually were, but at the same time, it's also a metaphor and a symbol for the masculine and feminine connecting together.
Within love, one person.
Within one person, within yeah, oneself. And I had achieved that in my own spiritual path. I was very fulfilled, but it wasn't in my body. It wasn't, you got to bring it down. And it wasn't until I was able to bring it down through having a loving relationship with my wife, Bonnie, and having great sex with my wife, Bonnie, and practicing many of these things with her, that I was able to maintain that high consciousness in this body, and I could actualize my inner potential to fulfill a part of my mission, which was to write Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. You know, that was just a calling. Once I realized I was going to write that book, 3 o'clock in the morning came along, and I woke up, and I would suffer until I got up and I would suffer so much that I had to go and write the book. It just made me write that book.
So you felt called to do it.
Very called to do it.
And there may be some people listening who haven't read that book and just don't know what's in it. Even, you know, 25 years later, you've replaced it now with Beyond Mars and Venus. And you address some really good things that you wouldn't have addressed 25 years ago. Like you talk about gay relationships and things like that. And you updated it with your only 25 more years of understanding the human condition. So I say read that book. But either one of those things is full of knowledge about human behavior and biology beyond what you'd expect from the title.
It's not just a relationship book, because it goes right to the biology. There's been an evolution in my message from just my observations of how men and women are, how they misunderstand each other. And if you haven't read those books, they're still classic books. You know, one of the big trouble in a relationship is you connect with your partner and you're getting really close. And like right after sex, you can feel men pulling away. Well, why is he pulling away at this moment of closeness? Our woman will be on the weekend. They have a great romantic weekend. And now he's back to work and she's going, but I thought we went to this high level of intimacy and connection and sharing. And so the whole idea is that men have cave time. They need this time to come back to themselves.
After ejaculation.
Well, now we're talking about the actual sex part of it. The basic ideas of Men Are From Mars book was, I mean, this fundamental misunderstandings between men and women. Often men pull away and women go, oh, why doesn't he love me? Doesn't he care about me? But the male physiology supports men in getting close, but then pulling back. And I would call that the cave time. He goes to his cave. It's not about her. It's not that he doesn't love her. He just needs some time for himself. And then he has more to give to her. And then there was another idea in the very popular rubber band. Men will get close and then they pull back. And if you don't run after him, they'll spring back. He's like a rubber band. But if you keep following him, he'll just keep pulling away. Another one, which is so good, is about what women need to talk. They need to share. Many times men interrupt with solutions. No need to solve the problem. Just learn how to ask questions. Right. So lots and lots of examples in those books on that. And another key point was little things make a big difference, because we often think, oh, if I do something big, it's going to have a bigger reaction. Actually, you can bring her 24 roses. You're going to have almost the same hormonal reaction as one rose. So the concept there is do lots of little things creates a quality relationship. So that's that message.
And it's in there, and it's oftentimes quantified, and you know a lot of stuff that isn't in your books, weird hormonal response curves and things that are echoed and from Taoist practices. And Montauk Chia was just on the show. We talked about Taoism and Qigong, and we got pretty graphical on that. And guys, this isn't a signal to you that Bulletproof Radio is going in that direction. There's three F words that pretty much are four F words, really, that if you read my books, you know about these things. Fear, which is a big one we all have to overcome. And then there's food or hunger, right? And then there's fertility, or another F word that you could use instead, right? So those are the three drivers of life. And if we don't address our responsiveness and what those do to us before we can think, then we will be reactive and we'll act like animals. And then the fourth F word, just in case you're worried about the darkness of humanity, it's friend, that we form communities, we support each other, and we help each other survive as a species and as a people. and as a planet, actually. So this is a positive message, but we got to talk about sex sometimes. And like, this is a master, but you're kind of coming out with some stuff that you haven't before.
So I'm coming out with new things now that my wife had asked me not to talk about. She died. She passed a year and a half ago.
Yeah. And so I'm so sorry.
I know. I felt your empathy there. And I'm going through my ups and downs with it, but when I'm in my work channel, I'm fine. And, but my heart is broken. I'm going through the grieving process. And a big part of that is finding love again. And that has happened in my life, is that I have a partner now that I'm in love with. And some people think, how could you fall in love after having the love of your life for so long? I'm a loving person. How could I not fall in love? And, but I just want to explain it. There's a place where you feel a lot of pain, so much pain when she died of cancer, that the reason I felt pain, see, we have a logical brain. The reason I feel pain is because I love her so much. So if I'm not feeling pain, then does that mean I don't love her? That's how the primitive brain goes. So I have to be in pain the rest of my life to convince myself to prove that I still love her. And that's not the reality. Pain is it's a wound. It's a brokenness that needs to be healed. And it gets healed by feeling the feelings, remembering the memories, missing her, loving her, feeling grateful for her. And then my heart is open again, and I feel more love than I've ever felt before.
You're an amazing human being. The work you've done on yourself just over the course of decades, just the way you express that, that in and of itself will help thousands of people who are grieving.
Yeah, not to feel guilty if you feel happy, just... And of course, the other side, people always say, on the other side, she wants you to be happy. Of course I do. But you have to overcome that little hurdle inside. It's okay to become happier again, and then happier again. That's her gift to me. And for, I'd say 6 months, could not sleep through the night. And I remember every mistake I made in the relationship. And it was so beautiful to see, again, how could I have handled that differently? And now I'm a better person. I'm wiser. I have more love in my heart. And the lucky woman I'm with, she's just so grateful. And also, I'm happy that I can now share more about my sex life because she doesn't mind. My new partner, Bonnie always wanted to keep our sex life wet private. Yeah. So I did write a book called Mars, Venus in the Bedroom, and it was more sort of G-rated.
Right.
But now I can take it to R-rated, so to speak.
I get to ask you the hard questions now, and you can actually answer them.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. How does a guy not get blue balls if they're going to have sex all the time and not ejaculate?
Okay. So now we've just covered a big jump there, okay, which is...
Everyone listening, the guys are asking this now. And the second one's going to be from the woman's perspective, just so you know.
So there's the concept here is when a man only has sex for like 5 minutes of intercourse, mm-hmm. okay, what happens is he ejaculates. He now becomes addicted to ejaculating within 5 minutes and then 4 minutes. Okay, this is an addiction. There's nothing more powerful than ejaculation. Nature gave it to us. It says, you got a job to do. Go out there and do it. And so we know cocaine produces high levels of dopamine. Ejaculation is on the same level. It says, you do it, you want to do it again and again. Then nature puts something else inside of us. It gets another program, which says, if you ejaculate into someone you love, different chemicals get produced. And what happens, if I was to masturbate to internet, what would happen is I would ejaculate. My testosterone goes down. We now know that. But if I ejaculate with my wife, prolactin gets produced. Right. And prolactin is what causes the recovery period. Now, recovery period is so that if we look at the ideal setup, is you ejaculate, you produce a lot of prolactin. Prolactin then lowers your dopamine, so you're not going to go out there and hunger for another woman. And it prevents you from being turned on again for several days. Okay, now, if you're stressed, then the prolactin gets used up right away.
And then you're horny again right away.
Or if you just saw online stuff, you get horny online. But let's say, let's go back 1,000 years in a world where people didn't have all these stressors all the time, high dopamine stimulators. You would ejaculate. You love the woman, so you produce prolactin. You're not interested in sex for 6 days. And on the seventh day...
Even if you're 18?
I'm telling you, this is what the research shows on 18-year-olds now. Okay, we'll go... The Japanese did this research on young athletes. They ejaculate on Saturday night. If they go for 6 days... they ejaculate on Saturday night. The testosterone goes down half. It stays down there for a half, for 6 days.
So get this. One ejaculation equals 50% drop in testosterone.
So that's for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, it doubles. You become alpha man again. That's alpha level is double the average testosterone level. And you get that as a gift from nature to if you go without hunting for another woman for 6 days. So this is like mind-blowing stuff because in my practice throughout all these years, the biggest issue couples want is they want to feel that passion they felt in the beginning. And where that passion goes away is ironically too much ejaculation. Mm-hmm. Now, there's two solutions to that. One solution is just ejaculate once a week. And as you get older, maybe once every 10 days. Yeah. And there's a formula for that that you know from the Taoists. But basically, occasional ejaculation will keep your sex life very spicy.
What I found in the data, and this is all on the webpage on the Dave Asprey site, is that when I ejaculated afterwards, as you would predict, I didn't usually have sex for a couple days afterwards. And I was testing, for me, the number was don't ejaculate more often than every 8 days. But I tested up to once every 30 days. And the longer I went without ejaculating, the more times I had sex. And this is really good for your relationship.
It's fantastic. Now, just think logically. If you're kind of bored with food, don't eat for 2 days. And whatever you eat is fantastic. It's fantastic. You fast from it. And we all know that's good for our bodies. It's also good for our sex life. And so, you know, people are always asking me, what's the ideal, you know, how much sex are couples having? And many couples really do just have sex once a week. Other couples have sex twice a week. And my experience is those are the ones who in their 40s are no longer interested in sex. Yep. Because they're now at a lower level of arousal. But if you can go for 6 days without it, then you get this double the level of passion that you would experience.
You're saying without ejaculating, but not without sex.
Oh, you definitely want to have sex, don't ejaculate.
So what's an ideal frequency of sex?
Oh, first of all, let me back up. I misunderstood you for a minute. Yeah, many couples, they have sex on Saturday night and they wait and they have sex on Saturday night and they wait and they have sex on Saturday night and they have their sex their whole lives. You know, this is the old fashioned way of doing it. Now couples are trying to do more. They feel like, oh, I want to have more because they're being so stimulated. But then they run out of the gusto by their 40 years old or after 10 years in a marriage. So that's one system. Okay, that's basic ground level. You want to keep your passion for a lifetime. Now you want to be Superman for a lifetime. That's what we're about, is you learn to have sex every day without ejaculating. You start with every other day. You have to build up to this because, and there's a technique to it, and we'll explore the technique. Yeah. But basically, the overview of this is, for me, for example, it's sex every day and usually twice a day. And minimum 30 minutes, 5 or 6 orgasms.
Okay. Maybe 20. These are, and you're listening to this, men can have an orgasm without ejaculating, and that's what you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about. And Montauk wrote wonderful books on that. Dr. Chang and the Tao of Sexology writes books on that. Is that nature put that orgasm, which is this surge of pleasure and love, and biologically, it's a surge of estrogen. Okay, so see, if we can back up for Beyond Mars and Venus, the new book, I explained that men need at least 10 times more testosterone than a woman to be happy. They need 20, 30 times more testosterone than a woman to be really turned on to her and in love with her. Okay, you can't be in love with someone and have an erection unless you have really high testosterone.
So love, maybe injecting some testosterone along the way is not a bad idea to help.
That's one system. Sex every day will do it. You won't need to.
If you do both, I mean,
don't need to.
So you don't use testosterone?
I don't know. No.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 68 years old.
All right. Similar thing. If you're watching this, or if you look at what Montauk Chia looked like, who practices similar.
Yeah,
similar
he does.
Things.
He says every 30 minutes every morning. Twice a day.
You both look younger than you are. I mean,
yeah,
for real.
Yeah.
It does do something to you energetically and physically. Okay.
There's no question about it. And the energy level that I feel is so outrageous.
Okay.
When I have great sex on a regular basis.
Now we're speaking about this so far from a pretty male perspective, right? Now, if you're a woman going, oh my God, I can't imagine spending a half hour, an hour a day having sex. Like, I'm already getting pestered for it 3 times a week. How does this work? I have my answers from my tests, but I want to know, how did it work for you? Because you were married to Bonnie for so long, and you talked to more people than me.
You can't always do it that way. When I'm talking about right now, it's every day because I don't have little children running around.
That helps.
Okay, so there's no little children. With Bonnie and I, we had always at least an ejaculation every week, okay? And then many times we would do the sex without ejaculating. It wasn't as nearly as much as what I can do now because I don't have little children. But I remember one time I said, I'm going to just do it every day for 30 days. And I also made an investment. And the stock kept getting higher and higher. And I put in $100,000. It was a currency. And it went to $200,000. And then I really felt like I needed to ejaculate. So I took my money out, made $100,000, and ejaculated. So I think it gives you good luck as well.
That all sounds, a little bit humorous. When I first published my data and I talked about this openly on stage, it was a talk, one of the most embarrassing talks I've given at a quantified self conference. Because if you publish your data for a year, oh, here was an experiment. I was going to go 30 days without ejaculating. They're on day 23. Oops. Like, how do you record that data? Like, I wasn't going to ejaculate, but I did,
Right.
I made a bad call, right? And so you write that stuff, but people came to me for a year or two after that and they said, Dave, I just tried it for 30 days and I got a $30,000 raise. I started two new companies. And part of it is this energy that comes in. But yeah, there's something.
It's intuitive energy. It's creative energy. And clearly after 30 days, I felt like, hey, I just made $100,000. That's good enough for me. I'm out. And it just turned out that 2 days later, I would have lost some of that money. Intuition is activated.
Okay.
I just think we want to use our full brain potential, and we're draining our brain potential today. And we can see it now with our kids today, particularly the boys. I wrote a whole book also called Boy Crisis. You've got boys, good book to read. But it's what's happening to them. And on one level, the big part of it is internet porn, and they're masturbating all the time to internet porn. And it's even more potent than just masturbating alone in your bedroom than to be looking at internet porn. Okay, so it's going to have a bigger addictive reaction to you.
What about phone sex with your partner?
Fantastic. I love that FaceTime thing. It's not a complete replacement, of course, and definitely more so for women, it's not a replacement than for men because we're more visual.
Okay.
So our imagination can be stimulated by that. But too much of it then can become too dopamine-oriented rather than dopamine, serotonin, testosterone, estrogen, oxytocin. When you're with someone in physical touching, there's a lot of different hormones that get produced that keep sex from being overstimulating. Because anything which is overstimulating desensitizes your ability to be turned on to your partner.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example of that. We see teenagers now masturbating every day to internet porn. They, at 21 years old, are impotent with a real girl, but can continue doing it online. Mm-hmm. And long before they get there, they're with a real girl. They lose sexual interest after two or three times because they can't sustain that level of attraction because the brain desensitizes. It requires higher levels of dopamine. They can only be stimulated by new and different. But when you're actually, and then when you're with somebody you care about, this is another one of the paradoxes. The more you love someone, care about them, the more estrogen gets produced in the male body, and that lowers his testosterone. So just getting married will take a knock off your average testosterone levels. Having children will knock it down even more, unless you have counter practices that bump it up. And that's Beyond Mars and Venus is all about teaching women how never to complain to your husband. Anytime you complain to him, you knock his testosterone down.
It's
like biological.
It's like the anti-Viagra.
Yeah, it's the anti-Viagra. It's success. Feeling successful raises testosterone. Feeling unsuccessful lowers testosterone. And when women complain, they don't realize, they think it's having a little effect. Men don't notice it so much, but they start getting more passive and more passive, and then there's more to complain about. So just as a rule of thumb, anytime a man is passive, irritable, depressed, angry, frustrated, grumpy, his testosterone is low.
Yeah, that is 100% true. Now, okay, what if you're single and your testosterone is low? My life has been changed. Even though I was having a good amount of sex in my 20s, my testosterone was lower than my mom's. I had metabolic disorders, right? So I started taking testosterone and it really improved things.
It makes your whole mood change. And see, here's to clear up a misconception. People think aggressive, violent men are high testosterone men. Actually, they're high estrogen men. They do have more testosterone in their body, typically. But when they don't have confidence and they don't feel loved and supported, what happens when a man loses confidence, his testosterone, if he feels threatened, turns into estrogen, and estrogen shoots up. And the estrogen causes anger, which is aggressive. And, you know, one of the techniques in Beyond Mars and Venus is if you start to have an argument with your partner, if you're angry and you're a man, you need to stop talking. Because if you talk, the estrogen goes higher and higher. Talking increases estrogen if you're talking about feelings.
So in that case, instead of talking, you just eat Ben and Jerry's, or how do you deal with that?
You say, time out, time out. And then you go and do something. I call it cave time. You do something that you're good at, that makes you feel good, that's not going to lower your testosterone, like masturbate.
Okay. Good call. I'll get even with her. Okay.
But ideally, go back to work. Ideally, do something that's going to help somebody. Ideally, go work on your book. Ideally, go solve a problem. Do whatever it takes for you. That's what hobbies, by the way, are. You know, a long time ago, hobbies, every man, quote, on his resume, put his hobbies. Right. You didn't have dignity if you didn't have a hobby. Because that's when you're stressed, you have to have a hobby, which means a challenging activity that you're good at, and that raises your testosterone, which allows you to then forget the problems you're upset about. So forgetting is the key. And men today, oh, you're supposed to talk about it. No, first forget it. And that's what the Buddha taught. Buddha, that's what meditation is. Forget all your problems. Let it go. Empty the mind. You know, this is the answer. And then come back to the world. Because when you meditate, if you're a man, your testosterone will go up. If you can forget your problems. If women also today can benefit from meditation. Traditionally, they didn't.
Meditation, I didn't know that.
Yeah, go to India with the home of meditation. Women were not taught meditation. They all say, oh, it's too difficult.
But wasn't that also just like straight up sexism? Like
No. Harvard did a study having men just sit down on a couch and measure brain activity. Men's goes down. Women sit down on a couch. Their brain activity goes up. Because they're thinking about all the things they need to be doing while they're sitting there. Women's brains are designed to be busy, busy, busy. We can more easily say, forget it and not worry about it and let it go.
So wouldn't that mean that a woman would need meditation even more?
Let's look at the hormones of it, okay? So what hormone lowers stress for women? It's either estrogen or progesterone.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Oxytocin increases estrogen. That's why, you know, oxytocin is it's the safety hormone.
Okay.
Oxytocin is safety. When you feel I can trust, I'm safe, oxytocin gets produced. That's what oxytocin, if you're affectionate to a woman, you create safety, oxytocin goes up. Now what we know, the new science, everybody just thought the oxytocin did it. No, what oxytocin does is lowers those high testosterone levels that women have today. And then their estrogen can go up. And estrogen is a hormone that says, I have help. I need help and I can get help. That's what lowers her stress. Women's stress level primarily goes up when they feel I don't have help. Men's stress levels primarily go up when they feel I can't help. I don't have the answer. Got so it. This is the two worlds coming together. And you can say this is all just conditioned into us. No, this is pure biology. A woman's body is designed to make babies. She needs every 14 days for her estrogen levels to become 20 times higher than a man's in order to get pregnant. Now, what stimulates the production of estrogen is feeling need. I need your help. Okay. So women have to find places in their life at certain times of the month where they need help. It could be going to your podcast. It could be going to a coach, a therapist, a doctor, or you could go have sex with your husband and it will go up even higher if you feel you're safe. So oxytocin, which is affection, non-sexual touch will generate oxytocin, will help women move from their male side, which is this testosterone production of solving problems all day. The testosterone starts going down, allowing the estrogen to start going up. And as the estrogen goes up, then she can start to become sexually responsive. She's not sexually responsive without estrogen.
Interesting. So there's this complex interplay in relationships that go back and forth. And I hear two things from the smaller sample size than you have, but I've talked with women whose partners have said, you know, I don't want to ejaculate. And the women actually, at the end of lovemaking, they feel like they failed because they didn't produce the results.
The women are the ones who want that ejaculation.
So why is that? And how does a woman education. Address that?
It's all okay. about education. Okay, so first of all, when I work with women, teach women how to be multi-orgasmic, okay? And teach men how to be multi-orgasmic. But you've got to learn
how to... Which is probably harder to learn.
It's an advanced class. Okay. It's an advanced class. And you have to be in a harmonious relationship to learn it. So that's the foundation of it. Then you go to the next level up. Generally speaking, you look at the big statistics in our country, and I didn't do those, the big studies that say half the women have never had an orgasm, another quarter, the next half of those can only give themselves an orgasm through stimulating the clitoris. And then there's a quarter that have experienced having a clitoral orgasm with their partner. And maybe a small portion of those have had vaginal orgasms. Well, in doubt, yes, we're talking a small amount.
I didn't realize that. That's just sad.
Yeah.
Those are pretty advanced spiritual states when you achieve those other things. At least all the women I've talked to who have that as a part of their practice, really, it does something much more than just pleasure.
What do they do?
Just having a vaginal orgasm, or just, you know, having really intense orgasm. Well, like, that people see God when they have sex. Like, they have incredible out of body experiences. Not all of them, but some do.
Absolutely. But this is a very tiny portion of the population that has that. And there's a whole story of doing it to yourself. If a woman's doing it to herself, she's not going to have nearly the experience she could have if she was with a man, period. Sex is two people coming together, is doing it on each other. Now, you can get your release. The guy's doing this, woman's got her vibrator. And just as this is very addictive to men, the masturbation, women using their vibrator desensitizes the clitoris, and at a certain point, a man can't give her an orgasm. Mm. But good news is that everything, whenever you're overstimulated, you understimulate for a while, and with the right nutrition, it will come back. It can come back. That's the good news. But you've got to let it, you've got to stop the overstimulation.
But some vibrator use for foreplay and all, not a bad thing.
If you need to. Well, I don't.
Even if you don't need to. No. Sometimes it's fun,
and I shouldn't
right?
say it the way. Everything is fun and sex should be play. So I have no judgment on it. But I do know that vibrators overstimulate the clitoris and desensitize it.
With super frequent use, for sure.
But if it's
2 minutes of play with two partners or something, that's unlikely to cause desensitization. Maybe?
You have the fun you want.
I'm asking, we
don't have any data on that.
We don't have data on that. I'm just observational data in relationships I've been in. I'm married and certainly have played with toys. But so many of my friends have. And most of those women, who at least the ones I talk with it about, they're all pretty multi-orgasmic. And they don't seem like they can't.
No, you can do this and be multi-orgasmic, but it's a different kind of orgasm.
Oh, no, they're multi-orgasmic without their toys, just with their partners, right?
Well, that's good.
They don't rely on the vibrators only and use them for long periods of time.
Okay, good.
But we don't have any real data, to your point.
We don't really have real data. Okay.
And there's risk. I'll get you on that.
So there's the truth there. Okay, so coming back to one of the most interesting things that's not scientific for a moment from Taoism, because I've been to China for 10 years.
Taoism is scientific. They've been studying for thousands of years.
This is a 5,000-year-old system, and I've been studying it 10 years in China. Before that, I studied in India doing the Tantra thing. Okay, so, and I like the Taoism thing the best. But I combine it all, okay, and the regular old making love. Okay, so one of the things they talk about is how the different zones of the vagina equal the zones of the penis that go to different organs in the body. Yeah. Just like we have acupressure points, certain parts of the vagina stimulate the liver, certain go to the lungs and so forth. And the clitoris goes to the kidneys. Now, if you're having all your orgasm energy releasing in the clitoris, then the kidneys become overstimulated. And overstimulation of the kidneys causes inability to process water effectively in your body, and you tend to gain weight. And there's a lot of women that get really big. And one of the reasons they're really big is because they're sitting with a vibrator for 3 hours a day.
Are you joking?
Nope.
And you said that there isn't a study about this.
This is my own experience working with people.
Holy crap. All right. I'm going to take that with a grain of salt, but I'll believe you.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that every woman out there is overweight, is sitting with a vibrator 3 hours a day. Okay. But what's happening, and the reason it's 3 hours, an hour, three times a day, is they're addicted to sex. They're addicted to the their release. And the more they do it, the longer it takes. Okay. So it gets longer and longer and longer. So I have to have them go through withdrawal. Okay. So and then they can start losing weight again. Now that's just one. Now a big part of what we know in psychology is if you've been violated in childhood, so you've got a trauma around sex, that can also cause weight gain. And so
yeah, that's a commonly
known thing. Now commonly known, but it doesn't mean every overweight woman has that, and doesn't
or
mean
men.
All are men. Yeah. So but it's a thing you have to deal with, and part of the solution to those things is sex. Is having the right lover, someone you love.
Sex with a lover.
Okay. Sex with someone who love, not with yourself. And having someone and learning about the body and the nine orgasms that a woman can have, according to Taoism. Nine types of orgasms. And the first, which I'm going to just briefly go through them.
Yeah, go through the nine. This is fascinating, at least to me.
And it varies in different parts of China. Okay. So the first is breath. And I think the Tantra people sort of went off on that one, where they get in classes and they just breathe together. And a lot of people go, this is so boring. But the Taoists, it's you don't do much sexual play. You can do some interaction until you notice the breath is taking on by itself. It's I'm no longer doing it. That's the first orgasm. That's orgasm of the lungs. Okay. You allow that to happen. And you let yourself go into the pleasure of the automatic breath. And you don't go to any of the heavy petty or anything until you've got the arousal. Otherwise, there's no chemistry. Mm-hmm. You know. So if you have no breath, then you start by taking each other's clothes off and massage. Okay. And loving massage is a woman, if a man is having the challenges, a loving massage means could be 10, 15 minutes of just touching his whole body and giving about 20% more attention to the penis. That's about it, and all the genital area, but then the whole body, and feeling love and awakening him in that way, undressing him and doing that for him, undressing her body. He can undress her body. Have somebody undress you is very arousing for most people. Okay. Then when you get the breathing going, now you're going to embrace and you're going to touch, hug, and breathe together. You're producing oxytocin. You're also going into somewhat of a trance state where you're no longer breathing. You see, it's happening to you. When your breath is automatic, then your primitive brain is activated, and that's where sex drive comes from. So just to jump into having sex without even feeling the arousal, and men will feel it first. And so you shouldn't just jump in until you can't go anywhere on her body much until she's got it going. Otherwise, she's just pretending. Okay, so that's your first orgasm. Next orgasm is the kiss. Mm-hmm. The kiss, by after the breathing, there'll be more salivation. The tongue will start to, you know, the lips will become dry. There's more liquid flowing like that until you get to the French kiss. And then you have to teach people to have permission to exchange kisses, you know. Right. And some people are prudish, don't want to put the tongue in the other person's mouth. Well, you're putting a penis inside.
Are these like married people?
Some people don't even kiss when they have sex.
Wow, okay.
Okay. This is
the things you learn.
It's a man sometimes gets so much into the intercourse, which is definitely the most stimulating, we go right for that. It's kind of like a cocaine addict just wants to get his cocaine up, you know, just the video game, we want to win. It's delay, inability to delay gratification. That's sex gives you this tremendous power to delay gratification. That's what men have to learn. And women have to learn relaxation and surrender. Because so I mentioned about two orgasms for women. One is where she's doing it to herself. She's trying it, she's doing it, she's working it, whatever. And that's a different kind of orgasm altogether than allowing it to happen. A wave crashes on you. You don't do. He does to you. And there's a shift there. And what happens generally is when she's allowing him to do because she loves him, and he'll be going along at whatever stage of some kind of stimulation down south. And then she'll see, oh, I could have an orgasm. And she'll try to grab it and she'll go for it. And that's exactly when the man will ejaculate because she is suddenly taken over. Because the truth is, if a woman can totally surrender, then a man will be totally selfless and never need to ejaculate. He doesn't have to have any control at all. But these are perfect states that you can build up to, but you have to practice to get there, unless you're just, she's able to just surrender and enjoy. Surrender and enjoy. not just, okay, you can have me.
That's right, right.
To use me, that's nothing. It's like, I'm really enjoying this more and more. So what she has to practice, and so what a man can know at that moment, whenever you're sort of getting, you're seeing ejaculation urge to come, back off. Not because you need to, because she's taken over. Don't let her take over. You have to feel the control. See, she has to feel, I'm yielding, you're leading.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying you do that all the time. I'm saying for ejaculation control. Once you've got a lot of control, then there'll be a natural shift where she'll want to jump on you. And okay. She might even start out. So role reversal is really fun in sex, of course, where she becomes the dominant, he becomes the submissive, then he becomes the dominant, she becomes the submissive. You're bringing back the male and female energies until then you're just going into the orgasmic state. To me, the climax is I'm yours, you're mine, we're one. You know, I'm yours, okay. You're mine, we're one.
In these different, you said there were nine types of female orgasms.
Okay, we just started with the breathing,
right?
The kiss.
Okay, yeah, those are the first two.
First two. Now we're moving down over the whole body.
This is very Taoist. Okay, very Taoist. Classic Taoist.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. They very systematic. Doesn't mean you always exactly have to do it, but you have to have kind of a sense of structure.
Having a system to understand and study and oh, that's what that was. That was mind blowing sex. Like, oh, that was type seven.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So then, the third one is whole body, starting with nipples, it looks like.
No, whole body, breasts. Moving her up to the breasts, around the breast, whole body.
Okay.
Bringing it up to the
caressing
breasts,
everything, the breasts.
Getting action here and gentle petting towards the nipple until you get some response. So it has to become erect, so to speak. Okay. It starts to come out. That means, and then sucking on that, and just sucking on that, that gives her another orgasm. So the orgasm in the mouth, by the way, is when she wants to penetrate you. Okay. So your tongue, generally guys want to penetrate first, but when she's penetrating back, that means she's now in her masculine. She's been receptive and she's in her masculine. The kiss is wonderful. And then, you know, you start kissing down the neck, kissing behind the ears, kissing under here. This is a really erogenous zone. It's here. Coming around the breast is kind of like you're wanting her to feel desire to get to the nipple, but not giving it to her. And then grazing over. And not always exactly the same. Just this is sort of a range of activities to do. And then some pinching of the nipple. Some women are different than others. Some more sensitive than others. But you want to get a lot of blood flow in there first. Now, nothing's really going to happen down here till you get all this blood flow. It slowly comes down her body. Now, so that's one, breath is one, kissing is one, breast, full body, and breast is two. And there's this, what they talk about that stage, the third orgasm, is the loosening of the joints. That's something, liquids get put in your joints. You just sort of...
So that's part of the third, the breast one, is the joints.
Yeah, it's the whole body experience of wiggling all around and everything.
Four.
Okay, four, now we're down to the clitoris. Now, clitoris... And now we know, and there's a lot of wonderful YouTube TED Talks on this, women discovering that their clitoris is just the tip of their penis, which is it's a split penis that goes all the way around the vaginal opening. So you want to stimulate that area first, actually. You never want to give too much right to the clitoris. You want to move that whole around. It's two sets of lips, and you're touching there with your hands, thighs. You always want to tease. You're going thighs up to that area, circling that area, lots of circling until you're getting fluid. And if you took your time, you would get fluid down there.
Okay. So that was four?
That was four. Okay. Now you're touching the clitoris and you're doing the clitoris and circling clitoris, touching clitoris. There's a point, different women have different size clitoris. Now, and many women have a bigger hood or a smaller hood. The clitoris has a little protective hood over it. So sometimes you have to pull the hood back. Sometimes the woman knows that and she'll just pull it back herself. So you can, that's when she wants direct stimulation. If you push too hard, it just numbs the whole area. So it's gentle until she's pushing harder. So that's area four. Okay, now we're gonna enter. Okay, enter is just the beginning of the vagina. And so what you're gonna do is move your penis around there and stimulate back over the whole area you just touched with your hand, with your penis.
Or with a finger potentially.
Okay. Well, you did it with your finger the first time. Now you're gonna put the penis in the vagina. Okay. So it's got it's the magic wand, you know. Now if you didn't warm her up, for men, a lot of men, half the men, well, they'll ejaculate within a minute or two because they went into that electric socket and she wasn't yet turned on.
Got it.
See, if you're totally turned on as a guy and you go into a dead socket, you're just going to ejaculate.
Because there's no electricity pushing back.
There's nothing to receive your energy.
Okay.
So her excitement is receiving your energy. So she's wanting to get you in there at that point. But you're not giving it to her. You're circling around the entry of the vagina with your penis. And it could be just a tiny, teeny movement in. Take your hand, move it around, move it back and forth, move it in, and she'll have another orgasm. Okay. These are like waves of pleasure, waves of pleasure.
Okay. So five is from the inside, but not all the way in. Entry.
Okay. Six is the G-spot. Okay. G-spot is like a quarter. It will pop up after a few orgasms or one orgasm, or at least they have 15 minutes of arousal, 20 minutes for some women. It will start to come out. And it's just that far in, generally speaking. You feel the size of a quarter. It needs pressure, not soft touch. It wants pressure. Mm-hmm. That's why it needs a good hard penis in there pushing up against that. Okay. Now, that's the G-spot. She has that orgasm. Okay, now she's moving around.
Now she's pretty damned exhausted by now.
Not if she has enough estrogen.
Okay. Got
estrogen
it.
Fuels the whole thing.
I'm not
thing.
Saying she wants to stop. I'm just saying that she's exhausted.
Oh, she won't want to stop. And she's okay. Not exhausted. Well, right. I don't know. Maybe she's loving it. Okay. Yeah. Then, okay, beyond the G-spot, the same about an inch in there, something called the E-spot. And it doesn't have pleasure until the G-spot has an orgasm. And that's the E-spot. I don't know why it's called the E-spot, but they call it the E-spot. Some guy whose name started with E, he discovered it. That's Western
that was
science.
That was Mr. Erotic, right?
Okay, Mr. Erotic. Okay, E-spot. Now you're stimulating. You're going a little deeper. So the idea for a man, just to remember from this, is starting little, then going a little deeper, get a little deeper for quite a while. She's going to want you to go all the way in. Don't go all the way in. So many guys would like to last all night. But it's because they go right in. It's too much energy. She can't receive all that energy and it backs up into you. So now you're up going deeper and deeper and deeper. Okay. And it could feel like you're almost all the way in. But then what will happen is after she has an orgasm or two of the E-spot area, then what happens is C-spot. C-spot is cervix. That's right. Number, we're at 4, 5, 6, 7.
Some guys aren't quite long enough to get to the cervix, right?
You don't have to be. Okay. Generally speaking, you're not. Because if you had such a long penis that you hit it right away, it doesn't feel good to her.
Right.
It doesn't feel good to you. It's just
painful.
Like this hard. It's painful. So the idea is you're not reaching it. It will come down and kiss your penis. It moves down. After several orgasms, it will come down. And there's certain times of the month where it will and won't. Okay. Right. So it comes down. And then every touch is like sparks. Now at this point, we're at 8 or 9 at this point. And then you stay in. And then she gyrates her body, and it's like just like a little push in. The whole thing becomes very spongy, and it holds you in, and you just these little pushes.
But little pushes, okay.
Every little push. You don't have to be moving in and out.
That's number 9.
That's number 9. Yeah, and she's orgasmic. And what will happen many times is you push in, and then her body will go, and that's an orgasm. Push in, and that's an orgasm. And push in, that's an orgasm. And just stay in. And you can go as long as you want doing that.
So
that's a position.
Okay. Is this in one of your books? It seems like a master class.
A master class I teach online, and it's not finished yet. So you're you're foreplay to that. So people can go to marsvenus.com and find that class.
Just tell me that the class is going to be called a seminar. Sorry. I just made that up on the fly.
Very well done. Well done. So... Okay, I know our time is coming to an end, and the challenge here is real quickly, what a man has to learn to do is he gets to the point of arousal, and just think about this. You're going to give up what you think is orgasm for a couple of months. Just give up, because you think and you experience ejaculation.
As a man.
Yeah, as a man. Ejaculation, orgasm happen at the same time for men until you learn how to separate the two. Okay, so in your mind, you have to go, I'm just going to have sex, but I'm not going to orgasm for 2 months. And what will happen is you'll build up your semen so that you'll go in these waves where you go up in your excitement, and then you notice that if I keep going further, I will ejaculate. At that point, you relax, and usually you change a position. And I'll tell you something else to do in a minute. But that's called a peak of pleasure, let it come down. A peak of pleasure, let it come down. And as you get higher, those peaks of pleasure are really withholding back from what we would traditionally call an orgasm. But they're little orgasms, but they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And after a few months of semen retention, they're bigger than the pleasure you'd ever feel with a real orgasm. And you're not ejaculating. Now, what to do at those moments of peak? Those moments is you need to notice what your body would normally do if you had an orgasm. Mm-hmm. What you would normally do is...
increase the speed.
Yeah. So when you get to that thing, then just like this much time, pop, 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 with your pelvis. Just right. You're kicking the energy. You're displacing the energy into the muscles of your body. And here's the secret. This is the million-dollar secret. Took me a long time to figure this one out because I couldn't do this all the time with my wife because I get these darn blue balls sometimes.
Yep.
So the way you get out of blue balls is when you're thrusting as a man at any level, whatever you're doing, whenever you're inside of her or moving on or whatever, you have to do these exercises to learn how to thrust without contracting your anus.
Interesting.
That's the secret.
Relax the anus while you're thrusting and then you don't get blue balls.
Yeah. That's the whole key. And but if you get blue
balls. That's totally true.
And here's.
I don't get blue balls anymore from this anymore, but I just naturally learned how to do that. I never thought of it, but that's totally something
it's
that I do.
Relaxing the anus. And wow. There's exercises to do it. I learned it from Taoism. Mm-hmm. I learned it from Tantra. And I learned it from Baryshnikov.
Wow.
Baryshnikov, not that he's my mentor, but I remember being admiring of him because he, you know, he's a ballet dancer. He was known for his sexual prowess. The guy was like a super stud.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Super stud. And he didn't need to ejaculate. He can go from one woman to another. Okay. Not that I want to do that. I want to go with my wife. Okay. Because right. It's about love for me. But he had performance down. And so there's a little thing they do in ballet where you come up. It's a plié. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know if I can be seen on the camera doing it. It won't work. But anyway, imagine a ballet man dancing, his legs going like this, coming down. What that does is it strengthens these thigh muscles and the buttocks comes together. And when you do it, it pushes hard. You want strong buttocks muscles without contracting the anus. That's one of the movements.
So it's separating the control of the anus, the I have to pee muscle, whatever that's called.
Yeah, pubococcus muscles.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and most of the time, until you've taught yourself, those are the same trigger, but those are separate muscles. And then learning to relax one, but not the other.
Always keeping the anus relaxed. There's a lot of apps online. One is called Staminia, Staminia, which teaches you how to exercise your PC muscle and then reverse PC muscle. Reverse PC muscle is actually more important than PC muscle.
Wow.
PC muscle is pulling back. Reverse PC is pushing forward because you're going in, and that's the whole key is to go in while your anus is still relaxed. But you've got to learn to identify your reverse PC. You've got to first identify the PC, which is holding back after you urinate. So it's all about awareness down here.
I cannot wait until I get to look at your class on this stuff. I know many of these things, but there are so many nuances in this. And I have one question for you. So I've got
one other simple technique. Okay, real quick.
Yeah,
okay,
teach
real
it.
Quick. It's the brick technique.
Okay.
Okay. We can't stand up. The setting isn't there. And it looks a little silly, but take a regular brick, wrap a towel around it, put it beneath your thighs.
Or a yoga block would work, right?
I don't know.
No, okay.
I use a brick. You need some good weight.
Oh, okay. Then a yoga block would work. Okay.
And then for 2 or 3 minutes to 5 minutes to 10 minutes, just stand there. Good
with it
posture,
between your legs.
Put it between your legs.
While you're standing.
And practice doing your Elvis pelvis pump.
Oh, so a weighted thing that you're squeezing between your thighs, like just, okay, pumping
and
your thigh.
And the whole time, you can't, because of the brick is there, you can't squeeze your anus.
Oh.
So you're creating muscle memory.
So it's as high as you can get it between your legs in the widest part of the brick. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, smart. Okay.
Not the widest, just the right, just in there.
Okay.
Just enough in there. So but you got the weight to go against.
Do I put it in like,
yeah,
so it's
like
the long
that.
Way or so? Okay, the long way.
Just the long way. Put it in like that. And now you're just going to do your pelvis rock and pop, 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 pop,
okay.
pop, 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 pop.
Wow.
And what you're doing is training muscle memory. It takes a lot of muscle memory because you have no consciousness down there when you're having sex.
Do you think we could do like a group fitness class around that?
I think it should be in every fitness class.
But not in the group.
And then when you walk, you'll notice right afterwards, walk down the hallway and your hips will sway a little bit like a woman's. Because that's why women can last so long, is that whole muscle area is loose down there.
Weird.
So,
okay.
So ours, we're like tight. So if you're loose, it swings around. And that frees the energy up. And so you do that every day and do some of your pliés from ballet.
Blown away. Now, I've gotten to the point where I don't really want to ejaculate most of the time when I have sex. Because I just know I'd be more tired and just off my game the next day.
You lose your superpower.
Yeah.
It's proven if you ejaculate, your testosterone goes down 50%.
And so I learned that. I taught that to myself after a year of trying to prove it wasn't so because I didn't like that idea. The problem now, though, is that, okay, when I'm in the middle of lovemaking and you're getting pretty close, all of a sudden I change my mind. I'm like, you know what? The best idea I can have on earth right now is just to, you know, fill her up. for lack of a better term.
That's right. That's called the monkey brain.
So what is, and I'm pretty good at controlling this now to the point where like I know that, but it happens so reliably. So what is, for the a person listening who is just going, I could never do that. I would die. I don't know how to do it. What's the trick for turning off the monkey brain when you get to that point where if I don't ejaculate now, the world will end? How do you change that thought process?
It's the training before you have sex. Okay. This is all training the brain. Okay. And this is something I prefer to say just with a bunch of men, but men masturbate. And so you give up masturbation, you stop looking at porn, and you're in bed. You feel like you want to masturbate. So you touch yourself, feather touch, and you look at the clock and you say, we're going to feather touch. And as soon as any kind of close urge to ejaculation comes, you stop touching. You just learn to have an erection without an urge to ejaculate for 25 minutes, 30 minutes. And then you go take a shower and you don't ejaculate. You're training yourself that you can be fully aroused, which is double the testosterone without needing to end it.
It's
training.
Arousal and ending are separate events we think are connected that aren't. Yeah. Okay. John, this is incredibly precious knowledge. I mean, we do go deep on a lot of knowledge here. I'm going to put this up. I'm going to mark it as, you know, explicit and all that sort of stuff. There's a warning ahead of time. If you didn't want to listen to this, you didn't have to, but this is science based on thousands of years of practice, based on 40 years of your practice. Yes. And just thank you for being willing to talk about it, because this is, you know, it's touchy stuff for some people.
And you brought up something that we didn't finish, which was women also want him to ejaculate.
Oh, yeah, we didn't finish. Let's finish that and then we'll end the show.
Okay, they feel they did it. You know, every man always says to a woman, did you orgasm? You know, we want to know that we provided pleasure for our partner. And a woman wants to feel that she provided the pleasure for him. So there has to be an education around this. And another reason instinctively she wants him to ejaculate is the monkey brain, just like you have the urge to ejaculate, it wants to get pregnant. This is the non-thinking brain. It says, I'm not done till I get that. You know, that's her job to get it. And if she is consciously wanting you to ejaculate, it makes it way, way harder. Matter of fact, you can't resist. See, as soon as a woman thinks, and women will get tired in sex and then they just want the guy to ejaculate. So there should always be room for her to stop at any time. That's why you change positions. After every couple little orgasms as you're rising, let's move to another position, let's move to another position, and so forth.
Right.
So she has to be clear on that. And now I'm going to take it to the highest level. The reason she wants to feel that ejaculation is that at the moment of ejaculation, the reason we ejaculate, estrogen levels spike. And estrogen is the feeling of love. So she gets to feel that huge surrender on his part. And it makes her feel, her mirror brain goes into feeling so much loving too. So it's a moment of pure love for her because his estrogen goes so much higher. But if she also takes into consideration, this is a practice that as he maintains semen longer, his testosterone will go higher, which means that in sex, his estrogen can go much higher than ever he's ever gone. So those little orgasms that you have and get bigger and bigger, they're filled with estrogen, higher than what was before. But it's a practice. It's a delayed gratification. Instead of like, I want it now, I'm going to put some money in the bank account and let it earn some interest. And then we're going to have a much bigger kingdom.
So the whole, honey, I'll buy you flowers if you don't make me come.
I'll buy you flowers, $80.
John, thanks for just being real and for your careful study and analysis of tradition and what you've seen and from talking to thousands of people and just sharing it. This is the height of how our elders, the people who have become masters, have shared with the world. So I just truly appreciate you. Your most recent book, Beyond Mars and Venus.
Thanks.
And when your new seminar comes out, just as your friend, I would be honored to share it on my list. If you guys aren't signed up, daveasprey.com. I send occasional emails with stuff that I think is worthwhile. It's not a high commercial drink bulletproof coffee every day, although I might mention that occasion. But I send out basically the latest podcast. So I will send an announcement to John's class whenever it's ready, because that's actually something that I will be reviewing 100%.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
If you liked today's episode, you know what to do. Go buy one of the books we talked about, read it, and then, as you know, if you don't leave a review, you're a horrible person. Have a great day.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.